I'm glad you're here for another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word. We are in the book of Exodus, chapter number 8, and with verse number 16, we are ready to begin our look at the third plague, where God is bringing judgment upon Pharaoh and upon his land for keeping the Israelites as slaves and not letting them go. And up to this point, Pharaoh continues to harden his own heart. And Moses has been warned that he wasn't going to listen, that he was going to go back on any deals that he made anyway to let the Israelites go. And that there will be a full 10 plagues before everything is finished. Plague number one was turning all of the water in Egypt bloody red and killing all the fish in the river of the Nile River. And the second plague was also against the Nile. It was a plague of frogs coming out of the Nile. And once the plague was over with, all the frogs died where they were at and began to stink just as badly as those fish did when they died in the river in the previous plague. In both instances, even though it does not say it in the text that we have in front of us, the indication seems to be that the Israelites were excused. The Israelites were immune. So they didn't have bloody water in their containers, in their wells, or the stream of the Nile that flowed through Goshen. It was just like it was always. Same color, taste, everything. When the frogs came, frogs didn't bother any Israelites. They were perfectly fine. So that will continue throughout all of the plagues. Chapter 8, verse 16 says, "Then he who is said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand, strike the dust of the earth so that it may become gnats in all the land of Egypt." Now, the word gnat in Hebrew is actually connected to the word for fastening to something. And so when we think of gnats, at least when I do, I always think about those little bitty flies that multiply, you know, around fruit, particularly around bananas. We just had a plague of them when we got a bunch of bananas not too long ago. That's not what we're talking about. Those are annoying, but they aren't really a big plague. I think that we're more likely talking about lice, which definitely attach themselves to your body, or possibly mosquitoes, which are constantly trying to land on you, attach themselves to your body so that they can drill for blood. I'm thinking that's more than likely what this plague is about. So Aaron is supposed to use the staff to touch the ground, and then we'll have this plague of insects. So verse 17, they did so. The "they" there means Moses tells Aaron what to do and what to say, and he does. Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff. He struck the dust of the earth, and there were gnats or these lice or these mosquitoes on man and beast. And all the dust of the earth became gnats in all the land of Egypt. Now, the Egyptians, the magicians, the sorcerers, tried by their secret arts to produce gnats, but they could not. So this is the first time, plague number three, that the sorcerers could not do anything close to what Moses and Aaron did. So there were gnats on man and beast. Then the magician said to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God." So they acknowledge, "We can't do this. This is definitely divine in origin." But Pharaoh's heart was hardened. Again, he did it to himself. And he would not listen to them as he who is had said. So that plague goes on for an indeterminate amount of time until finally God calls it off. Verse 20, "Then he who is said to Moses, 'Rise up early in the morning, present yourself to Pharaoh as he goes out to the water, and say to him, Thus says he who is, let my people go that they may serve me. Or else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you and your servants and your people and into your houses. And the houses of the Egyptians will be filled with swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they stand.'" Again, I don't think it's completely clear what these critters are. The Hebrew word that's being translated out here has the idea of swarming, the idea of just constantly moving. Again, we have some examples in the insect world of insects that move all the time in a cloud sometimes. And they can be annoying, but they can be survived. So my wondering is whether or not we're talking about horse flies or deer flies here. And those are definitely a plague that we hate. When I was growing up, horse flies was the big problem. We'd be swimming in the creek, or we'd be, you know, swimming in the pond or wherever, and sometimes at the municipal pool, and a horse fly had come over, and it always wanted to land on your head, always trying to get down and bite you on anything that was above water. And we would usually just keep diving under the water to try to get away from it until somebody could manage to kill a single horse fly. And if you're not familiar with horse flies, if they get a hold of you, the bite hurts bad. Now, here in Michiana, I found out about deer flies. At least that's what I was told they were called. There's a bunch of them that live in the wilder parts of the Elkhart East property. And when I first came to be the minister there, I would walk out in that area as part of my health routine. And I discovered that during the spring, summer, and early fall, I couldn't do that because these flies would just come all over me and try to land on me and bite me. And I was constantly waving my hands over my head and around my body to try to get them to leave me alone. So my guess is that that is the sort of critter we're talking about here. Swarms of horse flies or swarms of these deer flies or whatever flies you know about that do that sort of gotta land on the person, gotta bite the person behavior. So that is plague number four, swarms. And for the first time, we are told in the inspired text about the exemption for the Israelis. Verse 22, "But on that day I will set apart the land of Goshen where my people dwell, so that no swarms of flies shall be there, that you may know that I am he who is in the midst of the earth. Thus, I will put a division between my people and your people. Tomorrow this sign shall happen. So Moses and Aaron deliver this threat slash message to Pharaoh at his morning ablutions, his morning time at the waters of the Nile, that tomorrow your next plague gets to start. And it's going to be worse than the last one. You thought the last bunch of insects were bad? It's going to be much worse this time. And by the way, sir, Israelis have nothing to fear from these plagues. They will be exempt. So verse 24, he who is did so. There came great swarms of flies into the house of Pharaoh and into his servants' houses. And throughout all the land of Egypt, the land was ruined by the swarms of flies. Now, they don't seem to be attacking anything other than people. And so, basically, nobody can get anything done. Because, as I was describing earlier, if you're constantly waving your hands all around you to try to keep these things from landing on you, you're not going to be able to do your work. You're not going to be able to do any recreation. You're not going to be able to eat. And if you live in a palace that doesn't have mesh screens, you're not probably going to be able to sleep very well. Verse 25. After an indeterminate time of putting up with this, apparently, Pharaoh called Moses and Aaron and said, well, go, sacrifice to your God within the land. Now, the original deal presented by Moses and Aaron to Pharaoh at God's directive was the people need to be able to go 3 days into the wilderness and worship and presumably come back that three-day trip to Egypt. Now, God presented that knowing that Pharaoh was not even going to accept that limited amount of time of his slave force being away. We're basically talking about a week. Eventually, though, we're going to get to the point where Pharaoh wants them to leave permanently. And that's what God is driving at by all these plagues. But at this particular stage, we're talking about at the middle of plague number four. Pharaoh says, all right, you guys can go, but you have to stay inside the boundaries of Egypt. Verse 26, but Moses said, it would not be right to do so. For the offerings we shall sacrifice to the Lord our God are an abomination to the Egyptians. If we sacrifice offerings abominable to the Egyptians before their eyes, will they not stone us? Now, I already talked about this earlier. The Israelis offer sacrifices typically of bulls, sheep, and goats. Now, the Egyptians have gods and goddesses that are represented in physical forms of bulls, goats, and sheep. And so Moses, having grown up Egyptian, knowing Egyptian mindset, says, Pharaoh, you know that we can't do that in the sight of Egyptians. If we butcher bulls, butcher goats, butcher sheep in the sacrifices that we're doing, they are going to take that as an assault upon their gods. And they will stone us to death. So we can't stay around here and do that. We must go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to He who is our God as He tells us to do. So Pharaoh apparently agrees with that logic. So he says, I'm going to let you go to sacrifice to He who is your God in the wilderness, only you may not go very far away. So he agrees. Okay, you can leave the areas where there are Egyptians living nearby. You can go to the very edge of the wilderness where there's not anybody going to see you do this stuff. But you can't go 3 days away. And I want you to plead for me, basically, since I've agreed to you guys being able to do this thing, you have to make these swarms go away. Verse 29. Then Moses said, "Behold, I'm going to go out from you, and I will plead with he who is, that the swarms of flies may depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, from his people tomorrow." Now this time he doesn't ask him, "When do you want them gone?" He says, "Tomorrow. That's when I'll pray for these things to disappear." But then he gives this warning. "Only let not Pharaoh cheat again by not letting the people go to sacrifice to he who is," because Pharaoh already went back on his word once. Verse 30, so Moses went out from Pharaoh, and then on the next day, he prayed to he who is. And he who is did as Moses asked, and removed the swarms of flies from Pharaoh, from his servants, from his people. Not one remained. So that's a good thing. They're all gone. But Pharaoh hardened his heart this time also and did not let the people go. So once the swarms were gone, Pharaoh chose to say, "No, not letting these slaves go." So now we're ready for chapter 9 and plague number 5. Then he who is said to Moses, "Go into Pharaoh and say to him, thus says he who is the God of the Hebrews." Now, I'm guessing by now, Pharaoh knows who Yahweh is. He knows who he who is, and he probably doesn't want to hear from him anymore. "Thus says he who is the God of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let them go and still hold them, behold, the hand of he who is will fall with a very severe plague upon your livestock that are in the field. The horses, the donkeys, the camels, the herds, and the flocks." So here this plague is going to be targeted against the ranging animals, not the ones that are being held close to home. And that will be important to understand later. Verse 4, "But he who is will make a distinction between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt, so that nothing of all that belongs to the people of Israel shall die." So once again, the reminder, this is only against you Egyptians. Those of you that work for Pharaoh, who is refusing to let the Israelites go out of slavery. Verse 5, "He who is set a time, saying, tomorrow, he who is will do this thing in the land." And so the way I picture this is, once again, Moses goes down to the river and meets Pharaoh when he's going through his morning stuff and tells him, "Hey, just wanted to let you have a heads up. Tomorrow, if you haven't let us go, God is going to start another plague. And this time, it'll be the animals. All those animals you have free ranging all over the place, they'll be gone. But the Israelis will be fine." Verse number 6. "And the next day, he who is did this thing. All the livestock of the Egyptians died, but not one of the livestock of the people of Israel died. Pharaoh sent, and behold, not one of the livestock of Israel was dead." So he verified. He probably verified the other ones earlier, but this time he makes sure. And he knows beyond a shadow of a doubt that Israel is immune to these plagues. What does he do about it? Well, the heart of Pharaoh was hardened and he did not let the people go. Now, it doesn't say God hardened his heart, so I think we're still seeing him making these choices. Verse number 8, We're ready for number six. And he who is said to Moses and Aaron, take handfuls of soot from the kiln. Now, a kiln is where you force the curing of clay bricks. Sometimes you can just put them out in the sun, the heat of the desert, and let them cure naturally. But a kiln, you cook them. And so the Egyptians, the Israelis have kilns that they use for baking their bricks that they are turning in to Pharaoh on a regular basis. So Moses and Aaron are told to go to one of those brick-making kilns and grab some of the soot that's left over from that process. Let Moses throw them in the air in the sight of Pharaoh. So he's going to take the ash of baking the bricks, and he's going to throw it up in front of Pharaoh's eyes. It shall become fine dust over all the land of Egypt and become boils breaking out in sores on man and beast throughout the land of Egypt. So Moses just throws it up, and if you've ever thrown dust or thrown ash up into the air, you see that, you know, it scatters out, and some of it just starts slowly moving with the wind currents away from you. And so that becomes the visual picture for Pharaoh to see the start of this plague. And so next thing we know, Egyptians and the Egyptian animals that apparently were closer to home, not free-ranging out, all of those start getting boils on their body, like big blisters. Moses did exactly what he was told to. He took that and threw it up in the air and became boils breaking out on sores on man and beast. Now, verse 11, we know that these sorcerers, these Egyptian magicians, couldn't reproduce the last couple of plagues. So they've given up. This time, we find out they're getting hit personally. The magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boils came upon the magicians and upon all the Egyptians. So these guys, we have a couple of names for them in the New Testament, Yannis and Yambres. They can't even hang around where Moses and Aaron are at because they've got boils all over their bodies. But verse 12, apparently at this juncture, when Pharaoh himself was no doubt afflicted with boils, he was ready to crack. He was ready to let the Israelis go. Now, more than likely, and I think that's indicated by the way the story goes, eventually he would have changed his mind and gone after them. But God has decided that this needs to play out in a very specific manner. So he steps in. Verse number 12. This is the first time we've heard this. But he who is hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he did not listen to them as he who is had spoken to Moses. So Pharaoh has now been reinforced in his bad attitude by God making sure he doesn't give up too soon on this plague of boils. Well, next plague. Verse number 13. Then he who is said to Moses, rise up early in the morning, present yourself to Pharaoh, and say, thus says he who is the God of Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. For this time I will send all the plagues on you yourself and on your servants and your people so that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. For by now I could have put out my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, and you would have been cut off from the earth. So basically, God's message this time is, you better listen up. I could have killed you at any moment in this whole process, but I didn't. Verse 16, but for this purpose I have raised you up to show you my power so that my name may be proclaimed in all the earth. So God says, I brought you to this moment and to this attitude as a demonstration to everyone around that the gods of Egypt are nothing. I'm the only one. I'm the real deal. I have all the power. Verse 17, you are still exalting yourself against my people and will not let them go. So he speaks to the free will choice that Pharaoh has been making. Behold, about this time tomorrow, I will cause very heavy hail to fall, such as has never been in Egypt from the day it was founded until now. Egypt hardly ever sees a drop of rain, let alone hail. Verse 19, now therefore send, get your livestock and all that you have in the field into safe shelter, for every man and beast that's in the field and is not brought home will die when the hail falls on them. So apparently some animals that were closer to home, not free ranging, were still alive for the Egyptians. God warns them, you better get those animals back under cover by tomorrow before the hailstorm starts. Because if you don't have them under cover, if you don't have yourself under cover, there will be death. Because this hail will be the artillery of God, like we've seen in other stories.